All right, man. So we're this is number three. How are you doing?
Fine, and you?
Great. So it's been a really, really busy 2 or 3 weeks since our last episode where we
Yes.
did WRL. And we're
It's
going to go up the stack today. Today's all about C++ CX when we get to that point.
That's great.
But you've been really busy with the community, man. So what's going on?
You know, I was checking what was happening in the community after the build event in general, in forums, events, and blogs, you know, and other channels. And it's like the momentum is not now fading, but actually increasing.
Interesting.
I'm really glad to see that, you know. So, for instance, in the last week, a lot of things happened about C++ in the community that were not Microsoft things, but the community talking, blogging, or presenting about things we were doing. So
Good.
I can mention, you know, we have for sure our most valuable professional programs. These are highlighted people from the community who are in general blogging or answering in forums about our technologies. And I can mention the case of Marius Vansila from
Okay.
Romania,
Cool.
Nishant Sivakumar, he's from India. I think he lives in US. And for sure, Canadian heroine Kate Gregory.
Yes.
You know, she presented this week a webcast in an independent site about building Windows 8 applications, and she also released a complete training on developing Windows 8 applications with XAML and C++. We are
Nice,
amazing, you
Kate.
know? I mean,
Rockstar.
their stories could be your story as well. You know, they are already starting making money, you know, with these technologies. This could be your case as well, so I'm really delighted. There are also in some geographies like Argentina, France, Germany, and even Poland, there were, you know, talks about C++ with or without, you know, Metro or XAML technologies this week. So I'm seeing an increase in the activity that is
Good.
happening. And for sure, as I said, I'm really glad. Something else that I noticed is
What's that?
that some people working today, you know, in iOS applications are checking with certain interest the Metro style programming model,
Sweet.
and I started seeing the first applications being ported. That is also a good news, you know. I mean, you don't need to stop working on one platform, but if you can expand, you know, your in certain way your reach, it's always good for you know. It's actually
Sure.
your business. So
Good.
those are, you know, in general the news
That's the
I have
news.
to
That's
tell.
good news. So what about the C++ conformance thing? So Herb had a Dr. Dobbs article in the
Yes.
Channel 9, Epic Channel 9 threads and the Epic VC blog threads, but what's the official sort of
Okay, well, and also we cannot ignore, you know, there's User Voice, that is the feedback tool for suggestions the community has. And at this time, you know, support more C++ 11 features, it's topping the list regarding all the suggestions for Visual C++. So I just replied that this is under review at this time, and I want to repeat what Herb Sutter said to Dr. Dobbs magazine.
All right.
It's something that it will probably not coming in Dev 11. I mean, not more, or Visual Studio 11, not more than the features we mentioned in our blog. There are things that are coming, but we are not in parity with GCC maybe or other compilers. But developers won't have to wait until the next release, I mean the release after Visual Studio 11, in
Great.
order to get those, you know. So at this moment, it's the only thing we can
Cool. But keep on
disclose.
talking and keep sending mail to this guy.
Okay.
And keep pushing him. So,
Slapping me.
well, I mean, it's good though. When you think about it, a lot of the investment that was made in C++ CX and WRL and the whole WinRT stuff, I mean, we're going to go find out today
Sure.
from one of the members of the C++ CX design team.
Absolutely.
One of which is Jim Springfield, and you posted his blog yesterday, and you should definitely go read that. It's a nice kind of short write-up about why they decided to go the way they did. And
Absolutely.
with Marion, we're gonna go a little bit deeper. We're gonna get him on the
Sure.
whiteboard. We're gonna kind of have him geek out a little bit with us and go under a little bit more.
Excellent.
And I think people are, by the end of the day, I think they're gonna understand that it's making COM programming easier on WinRT.
Sure, let's
Period.
repeat it this time. You know, there are certain people who are already aware and working on COM. when they saw the new syntax, they said, no, I prefer to have more grip on what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, the role of you know, Windows Runtime Library. Mm-hmm. For people who are newcomer, and in particular, something I'm noticing sure. about a lot of C-sharp developers who want to take advantage about the opportunity of getting their code running on the metal, they don't want to understand the internals of COM. They don't want either, you know, to understand WRL, I mean the Windows Runtime Library. So for them, the extended syntax we are covering today with Marian, it's perhaps the best option. And I confess, it's also the best option for me.
Well, listen, there's nothing wrong. I mean, it's ref, new, and hats. And there's a couple more things. But come on, man. In my opinion, I agree with you. There's going to be times, though, when you need to get down to that certain level to fine-tune things.
Totally.
That's what native developers do. But the point is C++ CX is native code.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Compiled to native.
Rock and roll, man. So we're going to go talk to Marian Leparo, super smart young guy, and we'll come back and close things up.
Excellent.
Right on. Well, wait a minute. Wait. We can't do that because then we're going to destruct, man.
Yes. Let's go on.
All right. So we are here with Marian Leparo, who is, in some sense, one of the faces of C++ CX.
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Great, thanks for coming on. So last time on Going Native, we focused on WRL, because we like to start at the lower level. Now we're moving up to C++ CX. We didn't spend a lot of time on the C++ CX. You being one of the designers of the language, you wanted to come here and kind of get a sense from you of sort of why. Right? Why did you do this? Why did you make C++ CX, design decisions, etc.? So take it away, man.
All right. So I'm a program manager on the team, and for the past 3 years, I've been working, kind of moving from the library side, working on WRL that you mentioned, towards a more language-focused work. And I've been part of the design working group, as you mentioned, with great people. You know Herb Sutter.
Yes.
He's been the lead of the design working group. And we had Jim Springfield, which is the author of ATL and a lot of other stuff that he did in part of the C++ team, like working on IntelliSense. We had Mark Hall, which is the architect on the compiler side, and he knows the compiler inside out. We had Sridhar, which you already met.
Yeah.
He was part of the WRL effort and as well as the language design. And Dion, which has, by the way, a great session available on the Build website with the inner workings of the C++ CX.
Yes.
And I should also mention the Ben Kuhn, which is a developer in the Windows team.
Okay.
He's been part of the same working group. He was kind of giving us the input of what Windows was planning to do with WinRT and how we should surface that in C++. It turns out he has a big passion on C++, so it was a great influence on the group as well. So this kind of group of seven people were involved in kind of putting the basis of the design. Then we kind of moved towards the implementation phase where we had the whole front-end team, the libraries team working, focusing on this.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of wanted to give an introduction of who were the people working on this.
But, that's great.
Kind of what are the goals?
Yes.
First of all, Windows 8 came in as wanted to change the rules of the game and how developers write apps. So we definitely wanted to make sure that C++ is part of that scenario, together with, as you know, CLR and JScript. We want to make sure that those three languages are well represented and immediately can start consuming WinRT APIs. And what we initially started was with a scenario list, and that was as simple as that. We didn't know that we were going to end up doing language projections or maybe a library-only implementation and so on. But what we really needed to ace were the ability for C++ developers to write great Metro apps using the new XAML UI infrastructure, such that they have a complete native app with cool UI. The other scenario was having JScript and HTML5 applications being able to tap into the native power that C++ provides and creating the seamless integration between those two languages, which is something that WinRT provides. So again, it kind of boils down to making sure that we have a great experience for WinRT. And last but not least, there was the ability to write DirectX games that work in Metro. And as part of that, we did a lot more than just a new language that you can use for some of that. DirectX, though, remains COM-based. So you will use a mix of WRL and C++ CX. But in addition to language and libraries tools, we also provide a lot of IDE enhancements. So definitely check out Boris's talk at Build that talks a lot about DirectX as well. I'm going to probably focus more on the language side and C++ CX for
this. That's great. Talk, so. And that's exactly what we want to do because, again, as you said, there's a ton of great content from the Build conference yes. on Channel 9. And watch that stuff. But in this case, there's been some time has gone by and people have provided feedback. And so some of the stuff that is sort of interesting to kind of get an understanding of is, why did you choose C++ CX? Why did you choose the CLI-like syntax? And further,
yes.
why not just use a library wrapper? So those yes. are a couple
so
of questions.
Those are definitely questions that we had on the table from the beginning. And it was not a fast decision, I can tell you for sure. First of all, we ended up delivering two different things. We ended up shipping a library that eventually got the name WRL, Windows Runtime Library, and the language extension called C++ CX, the hats and the ref news. when we started, as I said, we only wanted to target WinRT and wanted to make sure that we ace COM consumption and COM authoring. So we had some design goals in mind. Like, first of all, we wanted to design a library or language that is exception-based, that allows you to consume WinRT APIs in an exception-based manner. Mm. We kind of started with WRL in the beginning. And as we started designing it more and more, our first customer was Windows. And Windows, internally, a lot of the teams in Windows don't use exceptions. They're exception-free words. So we kind of started focusing that library into an exception-free environment, but also trying to keep that library available to be targeted towards an exception-based model. But that didn't last too long. So if I can use the board really quick,
please.
I can give you a really quick example of
Great.
Why that didn't work out.
Great.
All right. So WRL basically, in WRL we had one method called as, which is a wrapper of query interface in COM. Mm-hmm. So you would write something like, you have a computer, a waifu, f. And to cast to a different interface, you do f as I bar. And once you get out, you could write auto b equals. And what this will give you a computer of I foo if the conversion succeeded. If it doesn't succeed, it will give you null. Mm. With our design in mind, that eventually, if this fails in an exception-based environment, we'll actually throw here, and you'll be able to try catch and use the usual exception-based programming that you would use. Mm-hmm. But now, coming back to the exception-free environment, we gave this design to Windows initially. And the immediate feedback that we got was, well, in query interface, actually, I get the pointer back, but I also get an H result explaining to me why the failure in case of failure. So rather than them saying just if b equals null putter, which was the failure case, mm-hmm. they really wanted to drill deeper into the details and say, well, the H result said RPC termination, or it was a failure because the interface is not implemented, and so on, and kind of handled that scenario specially. Mm. So we went back to the API and said, well, it cannot be an API that returns you a computer. It needs to return you the H result. And this kind of ties in with basically all the non-exception-based APIs that return H result, and anything that you're getting out of that API is an out-read file param. Mm. So right now, you'd basically do something like this. I'll have to double-check the exact syntax, but you definitely need an H result here. And here's where you do the check. And this kind of difference between exception-based programming and exception-free programming made us realize that, well, besides WRL, which is going to be a great we want to focus and make that a great experience for exception-free programming, we need to design something else that will be specifically targeted towards exception-based programming. And kind of exception-based programming gives you the ability to chain calls. Mm-hmm. So obviously, a quick example of that would be, let's say, you have I'm going to make this API up.
Right.
I don't know if it exists. But you do a get socket, and because get socket returns you a socket, you can do, I don't know, get stream. And getStream returns you a stream, and then you could do read bytes, read an int, let's say. And this actually would be an int I equals, and I got the int out of the chain of calls. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in an exception-free environment, this will not work because each of the methods here will return an H result. So you write this linearly, and then every call you would check the H result and kind of step back, do the error handling, then again call the next method, and so on. Mm-hmm. This allows you to do this, and of course, if socket was never created, you're going to get an exception here, mm-hmm. so none of these methods will actually get called. Mm-hmm. If the socket is open but the stream was closed, let's say the remote stream closed it, then you're going to, the termination will end here, and you're not going to try to read the ints. So you still maintain the correctness of your program even by chaining this. Mm-hmm. And eventually you do a try-catch here, let's say. Well, don't do dot, 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 but you would catch the specific exception that you want to handle, yeah. and this is how you write your program. So definitely exception-based programming was very important. This is kind of when we realized this, this is when we formed the working group that I was mentioning earlier, and we said, well, we need to look at all the options. There may be library exception, libraries or language exceptions. Mm. So this was one of the first things that we closed. Another thing that turned out as we were designing this, that Windows kind of was moving towards an inheritance-based model. So interfaces like iFoo and iBar, even if they're at the ABI level, don't inherit one from the other, they're really designed for the language projections to show them as inheritance. Mm. So one example of that, and I'll just quickly erase this. So we really want to say iFoo, you know, inherits from iBar, let's say. Now, when you write iFoo star, let's ignore computer for a while, but when you say arrow, we really want to see all the methods of iFoo and iBar. And you can do that if you surface it as inheritance, but it's not real inheritance because the vtables of iFoo and iBar have no relation whatsoever. The only guarantee that WinRT makes in such a relationship is that QIing query interface in iFoo will succeed for iBar.
Okay.
That's how WinRT works. So now, another thing that works here because of this inheritance is you have iBar PB equals PF, which is an implicit conversion from derived to base. And interestingly enough, this is not something that you can do with computer because, you know, you have a computer, FIFU, and it equals some value, computer of iBar, will not implicitly inherit from computer iFoo. There's no library way of saying, well, I'm writing a wrapper type called computer of t, and I'm going to make computer of t class inherit from all the bases of the of t, for example. Okay. So that's another limitation that kind of makes us think, okay, we need to look at language extensions as well, like, as much as we want to focus on the library-only implementation.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, of course, one of the other things about this new world is the fact that you're going to be having C++ applications that interoperate with definitely exception-based ones like C#.
Correct, yes.
And so it's good to have some way to be able to, if the C# component throws an exception and somehow surfaces up to you, you're not going to sit there and go, hmm?
Yeah, right? Well, exactly. So, the mental model needs to be the same as consistency as possible, and sure. That becomes very important in the scenarios that we envision interoping for, where you actually author your component in C++ and consuming it in a JavaScript environment or C# environment. And that kind of tilted the balance towards a language projection extension, because take this method, for example, the readInt, that returns you an int. At the ABI level, this really is an H result, readInt, and really it's an out radval param of type int star. This is the signature at the ABI level, and this is what users will have to write without any help from our language projections. Mm. So in the consumption, obviously, when in an exception-based programming, we would take the out radval param and make it a return value, like I was saying here earlier. So the signature of the method that you would call is readInt. And this can be achieved both with a library implementation or a language implementation. We did that with pound import of a type library in the past.
Okay.
and we provide all those wrappers at the consumption level that, well, okay, take the H result. If the H result is a failure, then throw an exception, and you kind of only call this signature of the method, and it kind of hides all the COM goo behind it. But at the implementation side, well, what do we want users to write? Do we really want them to write this method in a class that say that implements this? We implement readint. No, what we actually want them to write is exactly this thing, because this is an exception-based programming. And the moment you start talking about implementing such a method, because of the interdependencies between the methods you could have in this class, you cannot really talk about a library-only implementation where we allow you to write this class, and then we maybe create a wrapper on top of it that it's result-based and calls into this method. Mm-hmm. We really need to be baked in into the language, and the moment you author this method inside your class, we already have the underlying low-level implementation for it that calls into it.
Okay.
And makes it an API-friendly class.
Excellent.
So this is kind of the... There are some examples of things that kind of made us go through the language projection side. And again, I didn't write ref class here because we weren't there yet. Like, it took even more and more design time to get to what the C++ CLI syntax is and realize how close we are to that,
sure.
That to make the leap forward.
So. Now, I kind of want to kind of focus on this just quickly. I mean, it's a language extension, but there aren't that many extensions. I mean, it's like... There's RefNew, and there's HATS. What else?
Those are the major building blocks that you would use. There are a few other constructs that you will need to kind of interact with, like delegates and events and properties. But mainly,
those are mapped directly to what
WinRT offers. Yes. RefNew and HATS are what you would need to first understand to start reading WinRT code that other people write and actually start scribbling some code on your own to call WinRT APIs.
And
What HAT basically is, it's a pointer. The size of a HAT is the size of a star, and you can use HATs where you can use stars as well, except bleating. You don't want to do memcopy of a HAT. Mm-hmm. But you can put them in a vector, you can put them in arrays, you can pass them as parameters. They're even ABI safe. We can pass them across the boundary because we know now WinRT boundaries are ABI safe. We can get back to that.
Okay.
So. In addition to that, COM experts should look at HATs as COM putters. That's the basic semantics that HATs give on top of pointers.
Okay.
It's a ref-counted pointer, basically, and compilers takes care of managing the lifetime. As the HAT goes out of scope, we will correctly call release for you. You assign the HAT to another HAT, we'll automatically call add ref. If it's a different type of HAT, we will call query interface for you and make sure that, you know, in case the conversion fails, we throw an exception that tells you, hey, you maybe did the wrong conversion, and so on. For RefNew is the magical keyword that you need to use to activate an instance of a WinRT type.
Okay.
That's all that it does. And it kind of papers over what the actual WinRT code would look like. Again, Windows offers APIs to activate a class. It's a raw activate instance that you pass a string with a type name and you get back a raw I unknown or I inspectable interface. But that's outside kind of the lifetime managed environment that we try to offer developers. So obviously, in the same sense, I already deleted that. In the same sense, we're trying to, for computer, to give you a computer only word by wrapping query interface in as methods that rather than returning your raw pointers, give you computers. In the same way we try to do with HATs as well, and that's what RefNew does. It gives you already ref-counted pointer back.
Mm.
So you just basically... Yeah, let's see, I can get rid of this. You'll always get... You don't even need to write the type.
Good old C++ 11.
Yep. So RefNew URI... which is in Windows Foundation, I believe, namespace, would give you a URI HAT. So you don't need to worry about managing its lifetime. Basically, behind the scenes, this will call the Windows raw activate instance. And the compiler will provide for you the actual string to Windows Foundation URI. And get back, a raw pointer, and map that pointer into a ref counted word. And as it goes out of scope, we will automatically call release for you.
Okay.
And if it's the only reference that you have to that object, release will go to zero, and that's the final release. In comp terms, the object goes and gets deleted from memory.
Excellent.
That's what basically ref new papers over, and it's not a lot of magic. You could write this code, mm-hmm. but you wouldn't be in a ref counted word.
Sure. And, you know, the question I would ask, I mean, I think the immediate question is, why does it matter to be in a ref-counted world? I mean, in some sense, I mean, that's my question.
Right. It's a mix of things. It's all the benefit you're getting from a ref-counted world, plus the exception-based programming, plus the inheritance-based programming, and not having to worry about deleting stuff. It's what we consider modern C++ today, and it kind of maps very well with the TR1, well, with SharePutter.
Yeah, I was going to say, if I use
a
SharePutter,
right?
I don't delete explicitly.
Yeah, you do exactly the same thing. It's this lifetime managed word
that
we want to expose to C++ developers such that they less and less use raw pointers and get into, you know, leaking or double deletion scenarios.
Of course.
That cause error in programs.
But the question I think we're seeing from people is, in some sense, does this take away from my ability to do some of the pointer arithmetic magic I need to do to accomplish, say, some super performant image decoder or image encoder or image processor?
Right.
And of course, the answer is no. You just do it. Use it in the library.
Exactly.
But let's bring that point home yet again.
Yes.
Okay. So this is boundary layer code.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And all ISO C++ code can be still written even if you enable this mode. Of actually making the C++ CX extensions available to you. In programming, you can still write ISO C++. You can use STL libraries correctly. And you can do raw pointer semantics, like you're just saying, with deep image processing and so on. When you're done with that and you squeeze basically the most performant algorithm out of your code, you can wrap that in a WinRT C++ CX class and expose it to maybe JScript or C#. If you don't need to do that, don't even use C++ CX. It's only when you want to interop with those languages, or you want to create a XAML UI application that you get to.
Okay, so that
move to C++
okay, that brings
CX.
Up a kind of a good point that Ion Toradel sort of asked about. Hmm. He's a Niner and also works at Microsoft.
Cool.
He's a native dev, but I think he's an test engineer, but he's a native dev. And Ion was asking about sort of data binding to XAML specifically and how that works. So that's kind of a nice thing that you just threw out there in terms, because you said specifically, you know, I asked a question about, hey, do you guys have any questions about C++ CX? And the first question that came back was from Ion, and it was about
data
essentially
binding.
What you just said.
Okay.
So the fact that if you want to interoperate with XAML, you need to use C++ CX.
Yes.
You just said that. So what I would then kind of morph his question a little bit, I don't know what the data binding story is. I don't know if that's essentially known yet. But if you can go there, go there. If you can't, we can talk about, you know, why you need to have C++ CX to interoperate with XAML.
Right.
So either way.
I'll answer the question shortly, condensed. Data binding basically requires that you deal with C++ CX objects, so it won't work directly with C++ raw types. In addition to C++ CX, it requires additional specific interfaces that you need to implement to satisfy the data binding requirement that XAML UI has.
Mm.
So we actually have some good examples, even a template that we ship as part of the build. If you create it, it'll give you an example of a ref class. I think it's called data sample, very, very specifically named as an example of how to do data binding in C++. And of course, it's a lot of code. It looks a lot like dynamic dispatching, so C++ developers need to be aware of that it is sort of a dynamic discovery of your type, and it requires a lot of string manipulation, so it's not direct invocation of a vtable call. You get some performance penalties from that, but you also get the benefit of data binding. Which means you have an array or collection of people, person, objects, and you bind it directly to a list in XAML UI, and all your person objects show up in that list, and you can scroll, you can tap, you can do all the gestures that you're used to without actually writing so many lines of code. You just need to provide this adapter layer between your native types to XAML. And it's that it will be done through C++ CX.
Excellent. That's good.
Yep.
All right. So there's your question answered, Ion. And we'll get to a couple other questions from customers as well, but let's, I guess we should continue on with the thread that we were on here.
Right. And I think we're kind of getting to how the syntax is similar to C++
yes.
CLI. I was mentioning that we didn't start with that, but as we were drilling through the design process and kind of figuring out how the implementation side will look like, we were seeing more and more that we're trying to solve the same problems that we solved 5 years ago with probably more than that, with C++ CLI. And I think specifically we had this realization of hats when we were talking about dereferencing pointers and what does it mean to dereference a WinRT pointer that it's ref counted, and are you losing the reference counting semantics when you deref? Absolutely, that would be a bad thing because then you're going to bring it back to you take its address and now you have a raw pointer rather than a ref counted pointer. So what's the mechanism of keeping that ref counted, the knowledge of a ref counted pointer when you're dereffing? And hey, we solved this problem with C++ CLI. It was called percent. It was a reference, a tracked reference. Mm. In the COM word, it's not a tracked reference per se, it's a ref counted reference because kind of the lifetime management semantics changes, but it is indeed the same kind of characters that we need to use in two different semantically related topics. And there was one, then we kind of moved to authoring to ref classes and inheritance. Inheritance of ref classes is a specific thing that XAML UI requires in its design. And behind the scenes, it's actually a COM aggregation. Mm. So people familiar with COM will know, oh, that's very complicated machinery there. And in addition to just being a COM aggregation, we also need to make sure, for example, that for virtuals and overrides, we usually make sure we detect which method we need to call at all times. Like we need to call the most derived type method, and that wizardry it gets implemented behind the scenes by the compiler without you needing to worry, and it looks like the syntax turned out that we can actually support it and looks exactly like C++ CLI.
Sure.
With that said, it is C++ CLI syntax on some specific aspects. What we realized in the design process is that we don't need all the C++ CLI syntax. Concepts like interior putter or pimputer, they have no place in native code. In native code, you should just be able to reference native types directly.
Yep.
And we kind of added more things to C++ CLI, like the native embedding mentioning that I mentioned. Mm. And of course, the STL interop, that it should seamlessly work. There's no reason why you would use any other containers in C++ and when. How does that interop with WinRT? That was the question that we answered. And
sure. That's excellent.
As well as taking WinRT collections out of WinRT and seeing working with STL algorithms. That is enabled as well.
Great. And it should be because there's some really good algorithms in there and excellent containers.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what it's all about. And it's standard, right? So you can do ISO C++. Standard C++, use the STL, do all of the stuff there, and that can actually interoperate seamlessly with WinRT objects as long as they're communicating through the C++ boundary, C++
yes.
CX boundary.
So it's always something to keep in mind as you write your apps, C++ apps, you want to write them completely in ISO C++ and keep that boundary as thin as possible and as less chatty as possible.
Great.
That will actually enable you to have good performance.
So that's something just to, in the last Going Native episode, that's something exactly at the end of the episode we discussed. And one of the questions I asked was, how thin can that wrapper really be? So
yep.
I'd love to ask you that question. I mean, I would like to write almost no C++ CX, for example, just enough to guarantee a great Metro app experience for the native code that's being written, and also for something from, say, JavaScript to be able to seamlessly call into my functionality, and we can provide this sort of hybrid world.
So certainly the level of C++ CX code that you can write, it's dialable. and with a good interop between mixing WRL with C++ CX, you can alternate the type of object that you create. Also, all your code that consumes WinRT types can also be optimized to not use C++ CX hats, but kind of drop down to IUnknown and kind of do your own query interface. So it's mainly a choice of taste and how much you want to optimize, of course, your program as well. It's also a question of performance. Mm-hmm. You will find that as you do that more and more often and you try to minimize the C++ CX layer, that you're writing the same code that the compiler would do most of the time. Mm. So I would argue that if you don't want to write a lot of C++ CX code, as you start writing the low-level code and compare it with C++ CX, you're going to start writing more and more C++ CX code.
Yeah.
Because in the end, the compiler does a lot of these things for you. And one of the big advantages of the compiler doing it for you is also guarantees correctness. Mm-hmm. And as we work on the compiler and we take more revisions and more changes, further optimizations can be done to that code, such that, for example, the backend compiler can recognize patterns in the code that you would find only by if the compiler generated that code and could be optimized in a future release. Mm-hmm. As opposed to writing native code, yes, you could optimize the best of it to your knowledge, but there's also always
sure.
This lack of improvement in future release. Like, whatever you're writing now, you get. Mm-hmm. That's the performance you're getting.
Yeah.
But, of course, you can write the code very performant, and that's definitely recommended. Like, try profiling your apps, see where you get the least performance, and those are specific sections of your app that you can hand-tune to your own liking. So, for example, you don't want to always check H results and throw exceptions. If you're in a tight loop of calling a method, you know, 100,000 times a second, like in a DX app, you definitely want to drop to H results and maybe even ignore the H result. Mm. And you want to continuously make calls of refreshing the screen, bring objects into the view and so on. So.
Sure. No, it makes sense.
That is performance critical.
And that's a great answer. I mean, it depends. The wonderful thing that you guys have done is you've created a high level abstraction at the language level. And let's be honest, ref new and hats, it's not a big deal, man. It's not a big deal.
I don't think it is.
All right. So it's not like all of a sudden it looks like a new language. I think some people definitely were a little shocked. I mean, I know I was when I first saw this because it didn't look like C++ to me. It looked like C++ CLI.
Yes.
Which immediately made me go,
Is it managed?
But I mean, still, well, I knew it wasn't managed because that would make, because WinRT is native.
Yes.
But yes, you're right. A lot of people did ask that question. I mean, what is this? But beyond that, it's nice that you've made this high-level abstraction that makes COM programming easier. So with that said, there's a question from Matt, who is a super bright young man who, you know, is on Facebook, one of the going native Facebook group, as well as the C++ enthusiast Facebook group. I think he owns that group, Matt. Nice job, man. He has a question essentially about, it's great that you guys have managed to make it easier to write COM on Windows, right?
Yep.
That's what you've done in some sense. And of course, Windows gets credit for that too.
Of course.
How can I take this C++ CLI or C++ CX and use it for other COM environments, say not WinRT?
No, we aren't. Well, that's an interesting question, and it has, I think, moving forward more and more releases of Windows and other platforms, we'll see more and more of WinRT coming up. So there's going to be a bigger surface, and kind of asking the question whether C++ CX will support non-WinRT scenarios will become irrelevant because more and more code will be written in WinRT. Mm-hmm. I hope more and more of the Win32 APIs will move to WinRT, and that will kind of render the point moot.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we are looking at ways to improve C++ CX and make it access different other areas than WinRT. We don't have any plans for this release. Obviously, the focus was WinRT.
Of course.
Definitely looking very interestingly at people playing with it and see what else they could achieve. We always get surprised at what the community does with the things that we specifically target on a specific scenarios, and then we see people use them in totally different other scenarios that are so awesome.
Great.
So. But right now, C++ CX is focused on WinRT. You're going to see a lot of the WinRT underlyings showing up in C++ CX. Like every platform object type is an inspectable type, which is a WinRT-only concept. you won't be able to have dynamic dispatching because WinRT doesn't have dynamic dispatching, and for good reasons, there is no specific need right now. So as we go in future releases, you will see both WinRT evolving and us trying to match that evolving, and also looking at different aspects of how we can leverage it.
Excellent. That. Another question comes in from Alf Steinbach. And Matt, I'm sorry, man, I can't pronounce your last name, but at least I, you know, it's Matt. So this is from Alf Steinbach. Why is there no prefix for UTF-8 encoded string literals?
Oh, that's a very interesting question. So that was one of the small things that we decided to do for C++CX. I don't think it's a big feature. It kind of mimics what C++CLI was doing as well, because C++CX and WinRT is a wide char-only environment. It's a Unicode-only environment. There is no ambiguity when you're referring to a string, whether that needs to be a wide char or a multibyte. Mm. It's only in C++ where you have that ambiguity, because initially there were no wide chars. There was only char star. So when you're writing a literal simply by writing in code something like this, we implicitly assume this is a char star literal. So when we evolved and moved to double char, we added the L in front of it to disambiguate and say, okay, this needs to be stored in the process as a wide char. So you still need to do that, and if you do auto, see this will create the type of C will be a W char T star, okay, always. If you do foo, as I said, it will be char. The only scenario where it's not ambiguous, if you assign it directly to a string and you say foo, this, because it's a literal and it gets assigned directly to a string hat, it cannot possibly be a char star. It's definitely a W char. So we do these small optimizations to say, well, rather than saving you a multi-byte to white char conversion, we know that this is a white char and we assign it to you. So this becomes useful not in this scenario specifically, but when you have, for example, a WinRT method that takes a string hat and you just want to put the value right there. You just can write quote, you write the value that you want to pass, and then you close the quote, so you don't need to put the L in. And it saves you an L.
Saves you an L, man.
There you go.
Hey, well, hey, it's great to come and talk to you, and I know that you're also going to demo something for us. So thank you in advance for that. And that'll come up after this. And people have now learned a thing or two about this. We've learned about that as a boundary language. We've learned about it's C++ CLI. But in some sense, like C++ CLI, it's really a small extension of the language with two or three things, maybe four
things. You can
say that. It's not that big of a deal. And it actually makes the more tedious COM programming, you know, for people who maybe have never done it, this is a great way to do COM.
Yes.
Targeting WinRT.
Definitely, we're targeting non-COM experts and kind of trying to hide as much of the COM and let you start coding.
But in true native fashion, you didn't hide too much. Because if you are an expert COM program like yourself or Sridhar or any number of people in the world, you can get down as low as you need to
go.
Including C. You want to write C? Write C, man. You can do it.
That works.
Thanks a lot, man. Great to come and talk to you.
It was great talking
with
you.
Nice work on this.
Thanks for having me on Channel 9.
Of course, man. And come back.
Absolutely. In today's demo, I like to go through some of the common uses of platform string and Windows runtime collections and using the C++ CX syntax. In addition to that, also how those types integrate with STL collections and STL iterators and algorithms. And in the end, I'll briefly talk a little bit about the async methods. So what I have here is a XAML UI application. I'm not really good with XAML, so it's quite simplistic, and I do have a text box in which we're going to introduce our inputs, a button that we'll be clicking throughout the demo, and two output panes. One of them is a text box, and one of them is a list box that we will use later on. So for now, let's go back to the event handler of the button, and let's write some code. So first of all, grabbing the text of the text button will give you a platform string. So this is a wrapper on top of the H string, which is an immutable string in WinRT. And so as a result, you cannot really change it. But a few things that you can do with it, for example, you can directly pass it on to other WinRT APIs. And in general, if you have a very chatty interface with WinRT, you may choose to preserve the string hats around and keep passing them. But for example, in our example, in this demo, what I want to do is actually change the string. And string hat doesn't provide you any ways of altering the content. So what we will do is move to wstring, which is the standard STL string. So I'll just include the string header. And I'll declare wstring. And I'll just copy the value. Of the string hat into the wstring. So you see data method returns wchar star. Now I can actually concatenate things. So actually what I want to do is say hello and then string plus equal text data. And let's display the string in the output window. So really quick, this I need to create a new string, a new immutable string. That will take the value that we created. Actually, it should be a platform string. So let's see if this works. I got the syntax right. Looks like I missed an L. So as expected, the white string remain white strings, and C++CX only if you assign to a string hat, it will actually can skip the L. So as soon as I run this, we should actually see the concatenation happening, and taking a while to show up. There it is. So hello. Now we can just switch back. And obviously, usually when you start interacting with strings, you may want to do more than just some simple concatenation. So what we'll do today is try to split the word into multiple words and then display them on the string on the screen. So for that, I'll create a separate class. Let's actually go with a struct. That will require less typing. Notice is a native struct, so let's write its constructor. Its constructor will take a platform string. And as you can see, we can declare hats as part as members of native classes, basically tying the lifetime of the reference that we're keeping to the lifetime of the C++ native object. So all I need is just to keep the string around, and a copy will be made for as long as the word splitter class lives. And later on, what we want to do is create a split method that, let's say, it just returns a standard vector of platform string. Actually, just to simplify things later on, we'll need to put this into a XAML UI container to show it on the screen. So I'll just use object to simplify this demo. Another thing that you'll notice is that this putting hat objects in standard containers works, and its own lifetime will be correctly managed. So now we have the string, and we need to parse it. It's a string hat, but as you will notice, if I just bring up the methods, there's not a lot of methods that allow me to change its content or even split it. So what we'll use as a C++ developer, we'll go to the regex syntax, and let's just bring regex in. Actually, I should bring in vector as well, since I used it below. Let's go quickly and define a regex. This will walk through every word in the sentence, and now we'll need to have two iterators that will actually do that. So WC, because we're looking for YCHAR. Hopefully IntelliSense will help a little bit here. Token iterator, that's what I was looking for. And now what we're looking for is to actually parse the sentence. Sentence being string hat, I just need to pass the begin and end, and just like I would with a W string. I'll pass the regular expression and that we want to start from the beginning. And we need another one to guard the end. Now we can walk through every word. So let's say while it's different than the end, I'll move to the next iterator. And what I'll do here is start accumulating the values. And I can actually return them. So now I'll create a new string with a value. And here what I would usually do is I first, I length. This will actually reference inside the string and pull a copy of the string. For the build release, so there's a bug where the string constructor expects that the string is null terminated. So to actually achieve that, we'll need to create an extra copy. This will be fixed in future releases before beta. So let's make sure I close all the parentheses. And now I'll just return value. So a few things here. We were able to create a vector of hats and pushback items into it. I'll make sure that this compiles in the background. We were able to create a ref new string and assign it to a platform object. This is because string inherits from object. So let's see, what did I get wrong? Oh, of course, this is a dot here. I apologize for that. So now let's start actually using this type. So I would just do word splitter, create the class. And it takes a constructor with a platform string, so let's pass in the text from the text input. And this will return a std vector. So it's a vector of objects. We can just assign it. Now, I know that to actually put this in a list box, I need to do list box item source, and the type of item source is actually an iterable of platform object. This is a WinRT collection, and what we have is an STL collection. And to do this translation, we do provide a header called collection.h, which makes that translation a lot easier. So I'll just include the header, and I'll create a platform vector, which is defined in that header. A platform vector of platform object. And I'll ref new it. And because collection.h was designed with STL in mind, it actually just works by passing the STL vector as a parameter to the platform vector, and this will create a copy of those items, but only addref the items in it. And all we need to do is on an item source is actually pass the vector, because vector implements an iterable interface. So let's see that this actually works. And what we should see now is the text that we input being broken down in words and being displayed in the list view, one word at a time. Let's just click, and as you can see, the two spaces were added, and the spaces were parsed, and the two items were added to the list. So let's switch back. So in general, you would interact with STL containers in your own code. You would write ISO C++ code, and at some point, you need to pass that information across the boundary to another component or to a WinRT API, and this is the time where you should translate to platform vector. Not anytime sooner. Of course, if you do that translation again often, you should consider keeping the platform vector instances around to save memory and avoid extra allocations. Now, another scenario is where you get a WinRT collection coming from another component, and you will get it in the form of a platform vector, or more commonly, you may get it as a Windows Foundation collections type, and it could be an iterable, it could be an iVector. Let's just take the iVector example for now. This is an iVector, and for this case, I'll just assign the platform vector to the iVector because it implements this interface as an implicit conversion. So how would we go in code to handle, to reason about this type? And this is where our integration with STL kicks in. All you need to do is think, how would you walk over a vector in STL? And the same approach will work with the WinRT collections. So let's just go with a std for each, which is what we would do for a vector. And we'd write begin, IV, and IV. This is the start and the end of the vector. And now we have a lambda. That takes one item at a time from the vector. So that would be a platform vector, platform object hat. And now, rather than adding the full list, let's add one item at a time to actually see this in real world code running. So I'll capture this as I'll need the list box here. And rather than item source, will these items append? And append takes a platform object conveniently, so this is all we need to do to make it work. So one of the things that collection.h does is defines the begin and end and the right iterators required to walk WinRT collections, just like you would walk any STL collections, and it enables you to use any of the STL algorithms that are available right now, like for each in the example that we just used, or earlier, the regex on strings. So the same behavior. So with that, I want to thank you. And if you have any questions, please post them. We'll try to answer them in line. Thank you very much.
Man. I think all my questions and a lot of questions people have had and questions you've had have been answered.
I kept learning, you know, with all these interviews. We are
Absolutely.
Doing demos, et cetera.
So it's clear to me why C++ CX was designed the way it was.
Sure.
It's clear to me that the seven people involved spent a lot of time.
Sure.
And the people that were involved were both from the C++ team and the Windows team. And they really figured out a really interesting solution.
Absolutely.
And I know that people wonder about the hat, why the hat was chosen. I think Jim, in his write-up on the blog, talks about it, but so does Marian.
Sure.
And it makes perfect sense. And then finally, you know, I don't think it's that big of a deal to use hats and use ref new. Right? Those are the two main differences. It's still C++.
Yes.
So when you think about, like, C++ AMP, they had to extend the language.
Sure.
but just a couple things. And there's reasons that people do that, and we understand that now. So please try it out, open your mind. If you don't want to, go ahead and use C.
Absolutely. If you are just starting today, you know, you can access the videos we published on Build. You will find also pointers to a lot of application samples we have in the code gallery. Mm-hmm. So you can read the articles the community are already writing. I just mentioned the case of, you know, Marius Vansila or Nishant Sivakumar. You will learn how to do data binding today and a lot of things, you know, and
Excellent. It's
like you can jumpstart at any time.
Cool. And finally, I want to say thank you to the people who provided some questions for Marion and the Facebook group, the C++ Enthusiast group. Those questions were asked. I hope you like the answers. But keep on interacting with us.
Sure.
And take care, man.
Okay.
All right. We'll
My
see
pleasure.
You next time.
See you.
All right.